You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Padres are in the market for a shortstop, and they may have found one. I am Allison Twitter, here with Corey Brock, who covers the Padres for our lovely website. And Corey, let's talk a little bit about what might be going on with the Padres in a shortstop situation. Ian Desmond, I keep hearing his name coming up, that the Padres might be favorites to get him. What do you know about what's going on with that?
Allison, yeah, I think it's a real possibility after a pretty quiet December, which is unusual for A.J. Preller, giving his short pass with the Padres. Didn't really do anything, but I think they're going to they have at least one big move left in them. How you quantify big depends on your viewpoint, I guess. But, yeah, their biggest need is shortstop, and I think Ian Desmond is a guy that kind of checks off a lot of boxes for them, a guy that's been pretty durable and dependable, a guy that has some home run power. He could help provide some offense in addition to, making all the plays defensively. And, they have to replace Justin Upton's bat. This is a guy that led the team in home runs last year, drove in 70-plus runs. They got to find a way to generate some offense with the returning guys and also, plug a few holes. So I think, Desmond is probably a nice fit because, he could play short, he could play some third. I think he could even play some outfield in a pinch if he needed to. Really kind of the perfect NL player. But, yeah, shortstop's a big spot for them, Allison. They've used 18 different guys since 2009. I know we've talked about that, but they would like to maybe lock someone in there. It's such a critical position, maybe one of the most important positions on the field.
Yeah, and there's not a huge market for shortstop. Can the Padres be dealing from strength there? Since Desmond, if he's trying to, set a market for himself or gain some leverage, I don't know that there's a ton of it out there. Is that something that maybe the Padres are, would give them the strategy to maybe wait a little bit before they make a move to sign him?
Well, I think, Desmond being a free agent, and also now, remember, they're going to have to give up a draft pick for him because of Nationals made him a qualifying offer. So this would their first round pick is eighth overall, so that's protected. So this would essentially be their second round pick they'd have to give up. So, and certainly they're probably going to have to overpay a little bit. It's kind of a tough one because they had this young kid, Javier Guerra, who they picked up from the Red Sox in the Craig Kimbrell deal. He's probably a couple years away. So, I don't think you want to go 5 years or maybe even 4 years with Ian Desmond. But if you can get him on a 3-year deal, I think that looks attractive. They've added some pieces to their farm system. And I know, Allison, we talked about the guys that got back from the Red Sox in the Kimbrell deal. So they've added some assets, and certainly they could move some assets to get a shortstop, too, if they looked at the trade market. And, any number of guys could be available there. But in terms of free agent shortstops, yeah, the list is pretty small. You could probably count the guys on one hand minus a few fingers. So I think Desmond will probably get paid pretty well. It remains to be seen if the Padres, how much they'll fork over, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of going back to just the offense a little bit. I know you touched on it, but, it can't be overstated that they need offense. It's something that really can't – I don't think they can go in the season without addressing it a little bit. And you just don't know what you're going to get from somebody who's unproven. So that's got to be a selling point for them, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, this is a guy with a track record. Now, you look at Desmond's numbers over the last couple of years, his strikeout rate's up, and his ground ball rate isn't sort of trending in the wrong direction. But, I think there's a proven history there, and then maybe a change of scenery will maybe help him. We've always talked about the big ballpark here, Allison, but I think in 2015 the ballpark played pretty darn close to neutral, at least more so than it has since I've been covering the team. 2007. So I think they feel like Desmond's power will probably play in the ballpark, and a guy that sort of fits in the middle of the order, not someone that can wholly replace Justin Upton, because I think that's hard to do, but it can sort of help there. And again, the most critical thing here, I think, is the defense and being able to lock someone in at that position and not worry about them and not have to worry about reaching your farm system or trying to sign some minor league free agents in June. That's a real slippery slope. So I think, this would be a guy that could, be their answer at shortstop, and then you can move on to filling some other needs.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with you now, now that we've been doing these for a while, and the ballpark playing fair. Like, I've bought into that because of you, because I've always thought of the Padres ballpark as anything but playing fair on both sides. Definitely not a hitter's ballpark, but it used to, like, in my years of covering the Astros, like, I mean, Minute Maid Park actually played pretty fair, but it was, like, known as a bandbox for its first couple seasons, and it never really, that label just kind of followed them all the way through the years. And so I believe you, Corey, that ballpark does play fair. I am like resigning myself to that notion. Are you proud?
But it's hard to wrap your head around a little bit. And I think it will still always kind of have a reputation as a pitcher's ballpark, just because, you know, the dimensions and all that a little bit. But, you know, they have made several fence modifications. You know, last year they put up that big fancy new scoreboard in left field, the largest scoreboard, video board, whatever they want to call it, in the National League. There was a real absence of that marine layer. So there were some atmospheric conditions, I think, that played into last year, and I don't know if that's repeatable or what will happen, but, you know, balls that were really cut down on in April and May, Allison, you know, those night games, we didn't see that last year. And maybe it's just, maybe it's the players. You know, Justin Upton made this ballpark look pretty small at times, and so did, unfortunately for the Padres, so did a lot of other opposing hitters. So we'll see where this goes. But I think, you know, one of the biggest things with the ballpark, and I've tracked this pretty closely, is that the players are no longer really complaining about it anymore. In the front office, I've talked to some guys, and, they kind of, make their way through the clubhouse and ask around a little bit. And, you know, I end up hearing rumblings that, players are no longer complaining about the ballpark. They feel like if they hit a ball, if they really run into it, really square it up, then it's going to go.
Just for the record, I want to note that you said atmospheric. That's such a great word. Thank you for using that. we don't use a lot of big words in baseball. You know, we're baseball nerds. So I want to move on to Trevor Hoffman in the Hall of Fame. So as we are speaking right now, Trevor Hoffman, on the amount of public ballots, he has 62%. Of the votes on the ballots that have been made public. So it doesn't look like he's going to be getting in. But I don't know why I thought he was like a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame, but there seems to be some writers who don't believe that he's a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame, but that he'll get in eventually. So how do you react to, like, let's say he ends up with 60% of the vote? How would you react to that? Would you think that's fair?
Yeah, trying to look at it objectively, I'd say I think that's a pretty good number for his first year on the ballot. I guess I never, I don't know if I'd really spend any time thinking about him as an automatic first ballot Hall of Famer. I think that's just such a hard, that's a real small company, I think. And, I think he's going to get in. I think he'll get in next year. You get a lot of people arguing the merits of the save, and I get it. Hey, I completely get it. But this guy was really good for a long period of time. Has the numbers to show it. You know, Billy Wagner, same thing. I mean, he didn't have the tenure that Trevor did, but, you know, the strikeouts per nine were better. I think he deserves to be in. So, you know, I think these guys are going to get in. I think Trevor, yeah, he may fall short, but I think it's going to happen. And I think the biggest thing, my biggest takeaway from all of this, Allison, is I don't hear anyone saying Trevor Hoffman doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. It's just that, hey, maybe it's just not going to happen this first year, but I definitely think there's a place for him in Cooperstown.
Yeah, I mean, the save has become a little bit of a lightning rod for people to, I guess, argue about when you have sort of more of the modern thinkers as opposed to the old school thinkers. The save is a save is a save. At the same time, you have to be on a team where you have a lot of save opportunities, and you have to do your job when you're out there. I guess a lot of people don't put a lot of emphasis on the one inning pitcher. But, I mean, really, like Billy Wagner, I mean, the quote that I remember him giving was, take us out of the equation and see how good your team is. When you're in the playoffs, I mean, there is no team in the playoffs with a bat closer or no closer. It just doesn't work that way. So I guess in that respect, I mean, you still have to give them a lot of credit for what they were able to do.
Yeah, and it's, I think a lot of us who don't play the game and, maybe even we're around it a lot, but still don't really quite understand the nuances of handling that ninth inning and the inherent pressure that comes with it. And now you may be facing the 6, 7, 8 hitter in the order, maybe more times throughout a season than you are the 2, 3, 4 hitter. You know, it's just happenstance in terms of who's coming up. But like those last three outs are critical. And I've seen this time and time again, Allison, where guys who have done a pretty good job as relievers, maybe even been good setup men, can't handle the ninth inning because it's an entirely different beast. I just don't think you could just slide anybody into that role. I think that's really selling guys short. And I think it takes a kind of a special guy with a special kind of makeup and certainly the stuff aside from that, but just kind of the understanding of just how precious these last three outs are that are separating you and your team from victory. Nothing's more deflating for a team to see a closer blow that save, and nothing's more deflating for a pitcher to have that happen. And I tell you what, in my time covering Trevor Hoffman, what a pro's pro. If you were looking for him after a game where he got a save, you were going to have to stand in front of his locker and wait for a while because he would just as soon let the other guys talk and let the attention be on them. But I tell you what, Allison, every time he blew a save, he was standing in front of his locker, willing to talk until all the questions had been asked, just willing to take full responsibility for what had happened. That says a lot to me. I don't think a lot of guys are really built that way anymore. And if I ever have one lasting image of Trevor Hoffman, it won't be him going in the Hall of Fame this year or next year, standing there in Cooperstown. It'll be how accountable he was after every blown save.
Yeah, because, when they get the save, nobody really wants to talk to them. I remember going up to Billy Wagner one time when he'd gotten a save, and, he was surprised. He's like, you mean me? Because relievers, you only talk to them when they blow it. And that can wear on somebody if they blow it, six, seven, eight times in a season, which is actually not that many. That's pretty typical. But it does show leadership, and it does leave an impression on some of the other players that, this is kind of how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, and I think, I saw a lot of young players kind of watching how Trevor handled himself, Nick Hundley, Chase Headley, other guys that sort of saw how professional he was about that. And they would stand at their locker if he made a critical error, went 0-for-4, and struck out in a critical situation. Just the effect that he had on the other guys in the room was, it's something fans obviously don't see a lot of, but I saw a lot of it, and it was real. And, I think there's really something to be said for that, just the high character. And what that all means in terms of the Hall of Fame, I don't know. People are just, eventually going to look at the numbers, look at the saves, the ERA, and make a decision on that. But for me, I think what he did and what he accomplished resonates a little bit deeper.
I totally agree. Corey, thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Allison.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.